Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Here's your host, Zach Gelb.
Here we go, our number two of our radio program. We're coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans Studios. Home is so much more than a house. It's the home of your dreams, and for 30 years, they've been making it better. Rocket Mortgage, push button, get mortgage. A.J. Hench did release a statement. He said, "I appreciate Commissioner Manfred's unwavering commitment to upholding the best interests of baseball. I regret being connected to these events and disappointed in our club's action within this timeline, and I accept the commissioner's decision." Did go on to talk about his time in Houston and how he does apologize to Mr. Crane for all the negative reflections this may have had on him and the Astros organization. He thanks the fans. And he is personally committed to work tirelessly to ensure that people will believe in him once again and all that. And he ends up by saying, "My time in Houston has provided some of the greatest moments of my career, and those memories will always be near and dear to me and my family. I regret that my time with the Astros has ended, but will always be a supporter of the club, players, and staff I had the privilege of working alongside. I wish them the best in the future of the game that I love." So a smart approach by A.J. Hench, who also was on the record this past postseason, laughing at any of these allegations when you had the whole whistling in the dugout by the New York Yankees. But it's a complete antithesis of the approach that the former Houston Astros general manager Jeff Luhnow did take, where even though he did accept responsibilities for the rule violations, he said he's not a cheater, and then he threw the players under the bus and also the lower-level employees under the bus and also the bench coach Alex Cora as a punishment right around the corner as well, under the bus as well. So completely different approaches. Bottom line is, I think baseball did more than enough here. They protected the players too, which I think is important for the game as well. And that's the Astros story. And once again, in the Houston landscape, a wild 24-48 hours where you go from blowing a 24-0 lead in a AFC divisional round with the potential to have an AFC championship game next week at Reliant Stadium in Houston, or Energy Stadium now in Houston. And you go from that to losing the game, it not even being competitive in the second half, where Mahomes and Hill and Kelce dominated you in the second corner, and then you find out today in the early afternoon that, hey, your general manager and your manager have been suspended for a year. The team is hit with the $5 million fine, loss of draft picks in the first and second round for the next 2 years, and your owner, oh yeah, by the way, elected to fire both the general manager and the manager as well. So a wild, wild sports day in Houston. We react to it right now on the phones at 855-212-4CBS. And once again, that's CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line, and it's sponsored by Geico. Whether you own or rent, Geico makes it easy to bundle home and auto insurance. Having a home is hard work, so get a quote at geico.com. It's easy. Chen, listening on 1300 AM in Tulsa, Oklahoma. He's next up with Zach Gelb on CBS Sports Radio. Chen, what's happening?
None. Thanks for having me on. I got to say, I think Houston got off easy, because I think there's a prearranged agreement between MLB and Houston to fire Luhnow and A.J. Hench. I mean, if you really think about it, $5 million as a veteran utility infielder, that's kind of a joke.
But that's the max they're allowed to, per the CBA, from what I was reading.
Yeah, I know, but that still doesn't – to say that $5 million is a lot is kind of like saying, well, you know, it's really not.
To create big picture, assuming, yes, it's not a lot. I understand the point.
Secondly, assuming that the statistics are still holding, like Baseball America said something like a decade ago, that if you're a first-rounder, you've got a 50-50 chance of making the majors. Second-rounder, you got a 33% chance. Third and on, collectively, is something like a 3% chance. And even with the Astros losing Gerrit Cole, a first and a second rounder for 2 years probably really didn't hurt the Astros. You know, so I don't really sit there and go, yeah, that seems like a stiff penalty.
So what did you want them to do? Just wondering. What else did you want them to do for it to be appropriate in your eyes?
Realistically, and I know this is going to sound harsh, four number ones and the twos don't matter.
Okay, but once again, does it really dismantle that franchise?
Mid-20 to high 20 pick anyways for the next 4 years.
Yeah, but here's the thing. If they wanted it to be really harsh, they would hit the players with the suspension. But that wouldn't have been good for the game, so they wouldn't have done that. I'm okay with this suspension and where it is, and I don't know what people else want baseball to do. And you're probably not wrong, Chen, as well, that maybe there was a little hush-hush agreement, and we'll make Crane look good. You go fire Luno, and you go fire Hinch afterwards, and we'll give you a little bit of a break off that and also maybe save your reputation. I could buy into that theory, but what else did people want baseball to do? So instead of going two ones and two twos, you wanted it to be four ones. Is that really what we're arguing here? Does it really change that equation that much? Because how many times does a first-round pick not even make it to the majors? Or they make it to the majors, but then it's 3-4 years later because there's the whole minor league system in place. Unless if it's a can't-miss talent, there's a long process in here. So I don't really get anyone that is lambasting baseball today that they didn't do enough. And that's just me personally. But, hey, you're entitled to disagree with it, no doubt about it. Sean listening on 750 AM in Vancouver, Washington. He's next up on the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. Sean, what's happening?
So I've been a Houston Texans fan since day one. I lived in Houston a long time before I moved up to the Northwest. And I have watched the Texans waste the J.J. Watt years. And if we let Bill O'Brien, or if they let Bill O'Brien stay there two more years, they'll waste 2 years of his best, of Deshaun Watson's best years. I mean, it's time to get rid of that guy. A division loss is the best he will ever do. He is not a head coach. He may be a great offensive coordinator, but head coaching, he can't do it. He can't make those important big decisions in the moment of those important big decisions. He's incapable.
I think there's a bigger problem in this entire organization. And I'm not saying you're wrong on Bill O'Brien. I don't think he's going to win a Super Bowl as a head coach. But it's amazing to me. It's actually very impressive to me how that he's been through a few general managers now, and his stock, without reaching a championship game, not only a Super Bowl, not a Super Bowl, but just a championship game, conference championship game, keeps on growing in that organization. But they're not going to move on from him. You know that. They gave him all this power. It doesn't look like the structure is going to change, and he's under contract until 2022. So I do think he'll be back next year.
Thanks for ruining my dream.
I just don't believe he's going to get fired. But yesterday, it's as bad as it gets. And I was someone that I was defending Bill O'Brien on the field goal attempt. I didn't think it was the worst thing in the world, as some are making it out to be. But the explanation was horrible. The fake punt decision was horrible. And then that team, and maybe they do have trust issues as well with the head coach too, because they got hit in the mouth and they never had a counter punch back. And I know Mahomes is great, but they had no counter punch back. It's actually impressive when you get outscored 51-7. It's embarrassing, but it's impressive how they could have never stopped the bleeding. And I just hope, I really do hope, that they don't ruin Deshaun Watson. I know they invested on Tunsil, and Tunsil's good, not great. You had to make that move. But I really do hope we're not looking at Deshaun Watson in 2, 3, 4 years saying, man, they have such a great player, such an unbelievable player, but he's dealing with all these injuries because they don't do a good enough job surrounding him with the proper pieces to protect him. They have some guys that could catch the football. DeAndre Hopkins, one of them, one of the better receivers in the league. Fuller, if he could stay healthy, very good. Stills, they went out and acquired him as well, but it's the protection that still concerns me with the Houston Texans. Let's go to Don, and also the coach, too. Coach, big picture. I don't know how you survived yesterday. Don, listening on 750 AM in Oregon. He's next up on CBS Sports Radio. Don, what's happening?
I like your takes on the Houston Astros and about Watson and O'Brien thing. I think Roger, if he's kind of like listening, he needs to do something about the Patriots, even though they did cheat. They filmed. They're not supposed to, but there's got to be some kind of fine now after the season's over and to force the hand a little bit of what really goes on in Major League Baseball. They're taking a hand and they're being serious. It seems like the NFL's not doing that.
Yeah,
very
but
well.
here's the thing, Don. I don't think you can compare what happened with this latest Patriots scandal to what happened with the Astros with the way that they were using the technology. And this Patriots scandal, and I'm not naive, and I get I'm a Patriot fan. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that it looks great because when you watch the video, it doesn't look great. But they have that Do Your Job documentary. But really, with the information they had there, what were they gaining? Because all these signs now, they're not signs that are communicated with the hand signals. They're all through a headset. So I think the NFL situation this time around, now you want to go back to the first Spygate, it could be different. You can make a case there. But the Patriot punishment or whatever it's going to be, I think it will just be a fine. I don't think it's comparable with what happened this year and then what happened with the Astros the last two seasons.
Hey, I wanted to ask you something.
Sure.
You're not from the East Coast, like New Jersey or the Bronx, because you got that accent there with your voice. I was curious, and I wanted to tell you that I think Clemson's going to win by 17.
Gotcha. What do you mean by you don't think I'm from the East Coast? Is that what you said?
I'm not sure. No, I was wondering if you were, because you got that accent with your voice. It's very strong.
What type of accent? That I'm loud and I'm opinionated and I like to give
takes?
You
know, I've seen a lot of New Yorkers talk, New Jersey talk, and they're just like real confident in their talking. I think that's what you're coming across, that kind of accent. I think you have an accent. I'm not sure.
Gotcha. Well, I am from New York, but even so, what do you want me to do? A talk show here? That's real soft spoken.
No, you're pretty confident,
and
man.
That I'm
like
boring,
that. I like
and I shouldn't be confident. I should sit here and say, you know what? I think this team's going to win, but I don't really want to pick them because I'm afraid of being wrong. You know what? Let me lower my voice a little bit. Let's go golf a little bit. We'll talk some golf. Ah, the wind is blowing. The birds are chirping. The trees are swaying. We're here at the 18th hole at Augusta. And I'm going to sit here and I'm going to do a show on Bill O'Brien and the Houston Texans. And we're going to talk about the rest of the divisional games. And we're going to sit here and we're going to be pedestrian. And I'm not going to raise my voice. And I'm just going to whisper, because God forbid, I'm from the East Coast. And I like to get loud and I like to give an opinion. Let me put everybody to sleep. Hush, little baby, don't be sad. We'll start singing you lullabies here on the Zach Gilb Show on CBS Sports Radio. Because you know what? If you're confident and if you're opinionated, you have an accent. That's what it is. All right, we'll take a time out. It's 15 after the hour. Coming up next, Brian Jones, someone that is loud. And I don't think he's from the East Coast, but he is loud. Brian Jones is going to join us, and he's going to break down LSU and Clemson. He's going to break down the Battle of the Tigers and tell you what is to look for in the championship game coming up tonight. Brian Jones joins us next. It's the Zach Gilb Show on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to the Zach Gilb Show. Now back to the Zach Gilb Show.
We continue right here on the Zach Gilb Show on CBS Sports Radio, getting you set for LSU Clemson tonight for the national championship game. And right now, we welcome in a former host on CBS Sports Radio. Used to be able to hear him in this time slot with Chris Moore, and then he did the morning show for a bunch of years with Greg Giannotti, and that's Brian Jones, now doing a sensational job covering college football on CBS. Brian, what's happening, man?
Zach, how are you, man? I'm good, and thanks for reminding me all those years I spent over there where you're sitting currently.
Well, you probably would like to forget them because you had to work with my producer, Mikey B. He's tough to work with.
Yeah, Mikey B's got some issues, but you know what? we handle it, and we all got along. All of us, as he would tell you, everybody going through something. So we all had something we brought to the table, and it actually ended up being a pretty good ride. So I'm gonna have his back.
You say some issues. This is our second full week of the show. What are the issues that I need to be aware of?
Oh, you're gonna find out. You're going to find out that boy tripped now. I can't spoil it for you. You just have to witness it for yourself.
Here's the one thing, though, Brian. How do I get him to calm down a little bit? Because he gets very nervous before the show. He freaks out, texts me way too early. I'm like, our show doesn't start till 6 p.m. Eastern. Come on.
Yeah, you should try to do that with me, too. I wouldn't answer, though. So you're better than me. You just got to give him some time. And once he gets the gist and the rhythm of this new gig, you know, I think he'll calm down. But, hey, I'd rather be a little over-anxious than the latter. So he loves what he's doing. He wants to make sure everything clicks. So that's a good little problem to have.
Rather have him be hardworking than hardly working. For some reason, though, I just have a vision. When you used to do those videos on the Facebook page where you would say, "Morning, America, it's time for another edition of Gio and Jones," and you would tell everyone to wake their ass up. I could just see those things may not be going perfect the first time, and you end up throwing some papers at Mikey B. That's just the vision I have.
Mikey B and I, man, we should get into it. I mean, there have never been as many fisticuffs or curse words skewed at 5 in the morning as there were the 3 years I worked with him on Gio and Jones. Yeah, man, it was crazy up in there.
You were in here at 5 in the morning? I don't believe that.
Well, no, about 5:55. 5:55.
Brian Jones here with us on CBS Sports Radio. I remember talking to you before the college football season did commence, and you were all over LSU. You said they were going to win the SEC West. What did you see in that football team, Brian, before the year started?
I knew the defense would be better, and they didn't look like that early on in the season, in mid part of the season either, but they have here these last 3 or 4 ball games. They've been cutting everyone up, selling them for bait here of late. So I thought on that side of the ball, with all the guys they had coming back in that defensive backfield, of course, Grant Delpit, Christian Fulton, now you have this freshman, Stingley, you know, who could have foreseen the guy having the type of year he's had as a true frost. And the fact, speaking to Joe Burrow at the SEC Media Days, he said he really didn't start feeling comfortable in the offense until the latter part of the year, and especially that bowl game. You saw the numbers he posted in that bowl game versus UCF a season ago. That was the Fiesta Bowl, I believe. And then they added some wrinkles with Joe Brady coming over, sexying up that passing game. So I just thought they would give Alabama a run for its money. And the offensive line was much maligned a year ago, and they played much, much better this season. I mean, those guys really get after you. There's a reason they were one of the finalists for the Joe Moore Award. So this guy, or those guys up front, that's the big key. And you know, we didn't know who the running back was going to be, and the way they utilized Clyde Edwards-Helaire, not just running the rock, but in the passing game, has just been masterful.
Well, going back to last year, as we're joined by Brian Jones, every time I watched LSU in their offense, the player I was probably most impressed with was Nick Brossette, and you would see Burrow play, and he'd be okay, he'd be good, would have some big moments, but you didn't see that consistency. And then this year, as we sit here and get ready for the national championship game, the fact that he's coming off a playoff game where he threw 7 touchdown passes in the first half, he's won the Heisman, and now he's going to be the number one overall pick, it really is. It's mind-boggling. And this kid, as you know, he's so cool, calm, and collective. It's awesome to see.
Yeah, man, he's cooler than pool water. He never gets flustered in that pocket, and that's one of the reasons, along with some other characteristics, my colleague Rick Neuheisel has likened him to Tom Brady because of his demeanor within the pocket when all the craziness is around him. We've seen him have some incredible Heisman moments, extending plays in ball games. And you go from 57% passer to 78% passer. I mean, that's one dedication that you have displayed to your craft. And it's phenomenal. The type of season this young man's had. I mean, he's proven to be pliable, adapting to the new scheme or the wrinkles that Joe Brady brought to the table. And everything's just clicked for him. And they've got a ton of talent. LSU's always had talent at the wide receiver position. You know, they go by DBU. They should be wide receiver you, all the guys that they put in the league, even before the Odell Beckham and Jarvis Landry's of the world. So they've got those studs there. You know, even the tight end, Thaddeus Moss, look for him to be an X factor in tonight's ball game, Randy Moss's son. So this is just a well-rounded football team, well-coached, and Joe Brady is the leader offensively, the way he can just manipulate defenders with his eyes, with his head movements and things of that nature. And he's so damn accurate.
Do you think he'll be back with LSU next year, or is he going to be going to the pros? You have
no,
all these rumors.
Gone. He's gone. Yeah, he's gone, man. Go get that cash.
That's the best advice you've probably ever given me. Go get that cash.
Go get that cash, baby. That earning potential window, you know, it doesn't last too long for a lot of us.
Hey, we're talking to Brian Jones on the national championship game. The Orgeron story, too, as impressive as the Burrow story is, Orgeron wasn't even, didn't get the job at USC, wasn't even the first choice here at LSU, and now he's 60 minutes away from a national championship victory going undefeated. I love Ed O.
Well, Coach O is the man, and he should have gotten the job. You're right there at USC. The only reason he didn't because that Cajun dialect didn't jive with the folks there in SoCal, and that's the truth because, hell, they played well for him.
Sure.
Those kids played extremely well for him. I think they went 6-1, 6-2 when he was the interim head coach. And, you know, of course it didn't work out at Ole Miss, but he's probably arguably the best defensive line coach ever in college football. I don't think anyone's coached as many All-Americans as he has throughout his tenure. You know, he was down at Miami and coached there at USC. So the guy could coach. And what he says resonates with those players. And he knew they had to get better after Alabama beat them again last year. He knew they had to get better up front. And that's exactly what they've done. And so I love the way he handles his football team, how he goes about his business. He's a hell of a football coach. And you see what he's been able to amass on the field with the development of this team as a whole.
Dabo Sweeney and the Clemson Tigers go for their third national championship in 4 years, looking to make it back-to-back undefeated. If they win this one, what do you think that would mean?
Wow. Well, first of all, Dabo to be able to climb Mount Saban twice, you know, that's huge. No one else is doing that. Dabo was able to do that. Some just epic ball games. And last year they just blew the doors off of them, of course. But to win two national titles already, and the motto of consistency that Clemson is, just like in Alabama, it's just breathtaking to watch them on an annual basis just be in the thick of things. And people can talk all they want about how bad the ACC is. Well, when they get out of ACC, they don't lose either. So you have to tip your hat to the job Dabo has done, that entire staff. They recruit well. And you look at their defense, but they had seven guys they lost, bunch of first-round picks on that D-line. And they have coached up those young pups, and they're back in a national title ball game. So Dabo, he doesn't have to play second fiddle to anyone.
Do you think he'll ever leave Clemson?
I don't think so. I think he'll be there. You know, of course, if he could go home where he played his alma mater, Alabama, I'm sure that would be enticing for him. That would be very enticing. So I'm not going to say he would, but we'll see. I think what he's built there, and your grass is not always green on the other side, and yeah, you might have aspiration or had aspirations to one day coach at your alma mater, especially you know, at Alabama, a school of that stature, but look what he's done there at Clemson. That's his, man, he's built his own Alabama.
What type of start do you think we'll see tonight in this one?
It's been interesting to watch LSU. If they get the opening kickoff, they take the rock on offense first, it'd be interesting to see how this secondary, which was the veteran part of the defense for Clemson coming into the year, how they can handle all these weapons. That's what's so tough about LSU. They've got so many guys, myriad weapons. I mean, from the receivers to the tight ends, to the tight end, and then Clyde Edwards-Helaire, and they're able to hold up with just five men blocking, and then they, you know, can get Helaire out in the flat in space, and all those guys in space are such tough guys to play. And then on the flip side, you know, what I love about Dabo and what his offensive staff does with Travis Etienne is the fact that he doesn't have to beat you rushing the rock, although he's had a hell of a year, 1,500 yards. But you saw Ohio State take him out of that ball game. But how did they get him involved? They got him involved in jet sweeps. They got him involved in the passing game. Same thing happened early in the year when Clemson took on A&M. A&M came in and said, we're going to shut down the run. They did exactly that. They shut down the run. But ETN hurt them big time in the pass game, as he did Ohio State. So I love how they're able to develop a game plan and make sure ETN is going to have his paw prints on the outcome of the ball game, whether it's running or catching the ball. I just think LSU's going to have too much offensively for the defense of Clemson.
So you're taking LSU. How much do you think they win the game by? What type of game?
What is the line right now? I haven't been paying attention. What's the line?
I think I saw it was minus six LSU a little bit earlier ago.
Okay. All right. That's pretty good. Yeah, I would go with that. I would definitely go with that. Yeah. I just think there's too many weapons. It should be a fun ball game. And the way LSU's defense has been playing here of late, that's what's really standing out to me. If they can continue to bring that kind of fervor, there's no stopping this football team. And they're healthy up front, and the linebackers are all over the place. This Caleb on Chasen, this guy is a beast. But now with Trevor Lawrence using his legs, and that's a new wrinkle you have to now get ready for. You know, that could upset this defense, but we'll see. I just think they're going to still come out and play well. And you haven't heard the trash talking from the LSU Chargers on the defense side of the ball before this one like you did prior to Oklahoma. They said they were going to dominate Oklahoma. Well, it's one thing to talk the talk. It's another to walk it. And they went out and walked it, but they understand this is a different Tiger they're dealing with today.
Brian Jones, as always, thank you so much. It'd be great to watch you all throughout the season on CBS, and always enjoy when you take out some time for us. Well, wish me luck here with Mikey B, all right?
I'm going to wish you nothing but luck, man. That's my man. So you take care of Mikey B and his little quirky ass. He'll be all right. You'll get used to it.
Thanks so much, BJ.
All right, you got it, man.
There he is, Brian Jones, joining us on CBS Sports Radio. I like LSU in the game tonight. It's tough to pick against Clemson, especially with what they've done in recent years. But there's just something to me this year about the storyline of Orgeron and the storyline of Joe Burrow. I just think the offense makes an extra play or two with the game on the line. I think we got like a 34-31 game, Clemson up with about 2.5, 2 minutes to go, and Burrow has the ball in his hands late. And I think he gets a touchdown. And I think that LSU's going to win the game tonight. By the way, CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line, 855-212-4227, is sponsored by GEICO. Whether you own or rent, GEICO makes it easy to bundle home and auto insurance. Having a home is hard work, so get a quote at geico.com. Easy. All right, coming up next, we will, of course, discuss a little Packers and Seahawks ending.
You're listening to The Zach Gelb Show. Live, he's nationwide on CBS Sports Radio.
Get bombed with that Orgeron. Wouldn't say no. Be awesome. Be sensational. Every single person that would go up to him, high five, high five. Go Tigers, go Tigers, go Tigers, go Tigers. It'd be a dream come true.
This is the Zach Gelb Show. Here's your host, Zach Gelb.
This is awesome. I'm watching Ed Orgeron, a video from about 30 minutes ago, walking into the stadium tonight. And both sides of the streets are just lined up and filled up with LSU fans. And Orgeron, he's fist pumping, going up to the fans, high-fiving. This is the moment for Ed Orgeron. That's another thing, too. For example, tonight, if LSU loses, I'm not going to be crushed. If Clemson wins, there's a lot of things to love about this Clemson team. Especially with Travis Etienne and Dabo and Higgins and Lawrence. There's so many likable players on this Clemson team. And it would be cool to see Clemson win again. Three national championship victories in the last 4 years to go back to back. And there's something when everyone was saying, oh, they're not good enough. They're not in the SEC category. They're not in the Big Ten category. They play a cupcake schedule. To go beat Ohio State and LSU, it really would be something. It really would be cool. But the Orgeron story and the Dabo Sweeney story has been great, and we've all praised it. From walk-on, it was the dumbest hire ever when they removed the interim coaching tag label off him and made him the head coach. And for him to have this level of dominance, it's been so fun to watch. But part of me and a lot of me wants to see Orgeron win tonight in LSU, just simply based off the story of the coach and the quarterback. Because the quarterback was highly rated, obviously, out of high school, goes to Ohio State, doesn't win the job, overcomes adversity, transfers, has an okay year one at LSU, and then a year number two that no one could have predicted. Number one draft pick, Heisman Trophy winner, and an undefeated team. So it'd be cool to see that team overcome adversity and put the cherry on top of the sundae on what's been a delicious Sunday for
99% of the meal, and you just want to put that extra cherry on top to make it the greatest dessert you've ever had. And for Orgeron, it's the same thing. This guy was at USC as the interim head coach. They elected not to hire him. They go with Steve Sarkisian. He then goes to LSU. LSU didn't even want to hire him. They wanted Tom Herman, who ends up going to Texas, doesn't take the LSU job, and they fall into Orgeron. And last year, if you remember, right before that Miami game, that LSU won, everyone was having these countdown trackers, how many games until Orgeron gets fired, and he smacked Miami right out of the gate. And they had a good season last year, but in the big games, they didn't win a whole lot of them. And then you fast forward this year, every single team, no matter if it's Alabama, no matter if it's Georgia, Florida, Oklahoma, whoever was put on their plate, they didn't only beat them, but they devoured them. And it would be cool to see Orgeron and Burrow overcoming that adversity from previous stops and reaching the top of the mountain. And when I covered the Heisman this past year, I talked to Ed Orgeron the night when Burrow won the Heisman. He told me such a great story that someone on his staff was at Ohio State, and when Burrow, it was announced, I guess he was in the transfer portal, one of the coaches came up to Ed Orgeron and said, "You want to go to the college football playoff? Go get Joe Burrow." And they did get Joe Burrow, had the okay year last year for Burrow standards, and then this year it's been better than what anyone could have expected. So we've seen Dabo reach the mountaintop. And if Dabo wins tonight, it will once again be another incredible year for Clemson, another incredible year in his career. But I root for Orgeron, even though I love both stories, I root for Orgeron and Burrow tonight just because it would be the end and it would be the finishing touches of what's been a great redemption story. And I would love to see LSU win tonight. 855-212-4CBS. That's 855-212-4227. Jay in Texas, listening on 1510 AM. He's next up on the Zach Gelb Show. Jay, what's happening, man?
Hey, what's going on, Zach?
Doing great. What you got for me, brother?
Hey, man, I'm just telling you, and I'm like with you, it's like LSU. The SEC rules, man. I mean, in bowl games this year, the SEC stands 7-2 right now, and they lead the country. You know, it's the conference as far as I'm concerned. Of course, I'm a Texas Aggie fan. We won our bowl. Just proud of the SEC. I'm proud of LSU and Coach Orgeron. He's done a great job with them guys. And I'm proud of Joe Burrow. I mean, he's led that offense. I mean, tonight's going to be an exhibition game, preseason game. I'm telling you, they're going to take care.
Yeah, Jay, I would be stunned if we're sitting here tomorrow talking about how Clemson gets blown out. I know that this LSU offense has been a video game, but I just have too much respect for the Clemson program, and I appreciate the phone call. I have too much respect for the Clemson program. I know we can make this SEC versus the ACC, but Clemson's in a different category. You could put Clemson in the SEC, they'd have no problem. I'm not saying they go undefeated every year, but that would be a team that anytime they're questioned, they find a way to get it done. Remember, they played a close game against Bama, lost the first time around. Then they played Bama again. I'm talking about the championship. I know they had that one semifinal game where they got blown out. But they had that championship game where you have Watson finding Renfro with 1 second left, 2 seconds left, whatever it was. And then last year, it was a blowout. It wasn't even close. After a few early exchanges, it wasn't even close. So Clemson deserves that respect. The start to me of this game is going to be very interesting because Clemson got off to a slow start up against Ohio State, and you had LSU who was cruising seven touchdown passes by Burrow in the first half. So the start's going to be very telling, but I'd be so disappointed tomorrow. Even if LSU blows them out or Clemson blows them out, if we come into the studio, do a show, and we're talking about a blowout. Because I really do believe that we're destined. It may not be the greatest game you ever see, but I really do we're destined, and it feels like with the way both these teams are playing that we're going to see what is a one-score game tonight. Maybe at the end it gets up to two scores, but I think for most of the way it's going to be a one-score type of game. And how about Clemson, too? With all they lost in that defense, those three draft picks as well in the first round, to be able to get back to this spot, even though the conference is easier, it's still very impressive. And Ohio State, I get it. from the start of the season until the playoffs. They were so dominant, but it's been a three-team race. Once Alabama suffered that loss to LSU, and then they lose Tua as well, it's really been a three-team race. It's been LSU. It's been Ohio State. They're now done losing to Clemson. And those were the three teams. And then it was everybody else. You knew Oklahoma wasn't going to really give them that much of a run. I'm not saying you expect to be that much of a blowout, but you knew that game would be lopsided. So I can't wait for this game tonight. And I just think you have two great programs with two great coaches that they're firing on all cylinders right now. And the only part of me that when I look at this and when I break it down, even though I want LSU to win, I can't say I feel confident in either one. Even though I think LSU is going to win because of their offense, it's so tough to bet against Dabo Swinney. It really is tough. Joel, listening on 1340 AM in Colorado, next up on CBS Sports Radio with Zach Gelb. Joel, what's happening, man?
That was my whole tag, man. I can't bet against Dabo at this point. He's the Saban kryptonite. I was talking to Mike that, you know, I've got friends in both markets. I'm a national sales manager, so I've developed relationships with people all over the country.
Sure.
and know how important these programs are. Obviously, listen, you know, LSU or the Saints, most people in Louisiana would choose LSU over the Saints. That's just the way it is. And it's, you know, South Carolina, that's their pro sports team. So, I can't bring myself, even though I know that Burrow and Ogeron and that defense are, you know,
Espinger and Brady too on the offensive side as well. And just the stories too this year. I get it. Hey, it's tough to pick against them, but that's another thing too. It would be great tonight to see Espinger win. What happened right before the semifinals with his daughter-in-law going to the game. She was in the media industry as well, and they had the plane crash, and she unfortunately passed away. And he's really been tremendous all throughout the year. That's a veteran guy. Brady comes in. They allow the delegation there. It would be cool to see LSU win tonight. But then once again, if Clemson does win, it's the story of the dominance of still that little engine that could in Dabo Swinney, going back to when he was a walk-on in Alabama and what he's doing now at Clemson. Hey, both storylines are great, but since we haven't seen it with Orgeron and Burrow, that's where I root for tonight. Something, by the way, that we did see yesterday. Let me just transition to this real quickly. We'll do more on it in the next hour. That Packers-Seahawks game. Can people stop doubting Aaron Rodgers? Because on third down, he made two big throws. The Adams one was the most impressive. The Graham play, it can be debated all you want. I've seen that play 100 times. When I first saw it live, I thought he got the first down. I do believe that yellow line first down marker was off. They didn't have enough on that play to overturn it, in my opinion. So I'm okay with the call. I still think they would go for it on fourth and what would be, what, an inch if he didn't get it? And I think they would get that. But, hey, maybe you want to see that play out. That's fair. But that Green Bay team, and I know you look at their schedule, you say, all right, they don't have that many impressive wins. But next week, I think it's going to be so fascinating this weekend to see what the picks are with the 49ers, who are a better team, going up against Rodgers and what he was able to do. And also, I'd be remiss if I didn't bring up Russell Wilson, because it's a different situation than the Texans. Because the Texans, it's really Deshaun Watson, Hopkins, and then everybody else. But in Seattle, he doesn't have a lot of help, Wilson. I get Metcalf's good. I get Lockett's good. And he has a good coach in Pete Carroll. But how Wilson almost won that game yesterday is flat out ridiculous. That was so fun because it didn't look like we were getting a game. The fact that we got the game at the end, it was very fun to watch. But I don't think that, and I know a lot of people, the two things that people are on from yesterday, they're killing O'Brien for kicking the field goal in that spot. I don't kill him for kicking the field goal. It was the explanation afterwards that was horrible. The fake punt was worse. The fumble on the kickoff return was the game-ending play right there, even though I pulled them to get within three, but they weren't going to win once they were only up by three in that. So I would say the O'Brien field goal decision is the thing that's getting the most criticism from yesterday. And then also the officials on that spot and then the replay on that spot on the Jimmy Graham play. I've watched that play 100 times. There's some times I think it's short. There's some times and probably more times than not, I think he did get it. But that's the definition of inconclusive. So how can you change it? How can you change that? And don't tell me, oh, the Packers get all the calls. Can we stop with that? Because there was a play in that game where there was a clear fumble and there was a recovery and they didn't get the football. They didn't get the play to go their way. So stop telling me, oh, it's the Seahawks, they got screwed, and the Packers get all the call. I just don't buy into that.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.